Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, Secretary Hepler, Tom Kirschman, Deputy Director of the Wildlife Division. So we'll move into a discussion topic on the deer lice access permits, number 13 in your booklet here. A lot of discussion around this topic, a lot of input, a lot of differences of opinions on this. I'm not going to spend a lot of time going back over the background information, but probably dive right into your current proposal and then some justifications for some potential recommended changes to your proposal and the justifications thereof. So as we met at Custer State Park last month and had a lot of discussion, we brought forward those alternatives, a handful of alternatives that we discussed in length and talked about some various data. And ultimately, you as a commission body came forward with the proposal that is in front of you with three main parts of it. Quickly, number one, under your proposal again, archery hunting for non-resident hunters begin on that first Saturday after Labor Day. For public lands and private lands leased by the department, again, lands leased by the department would be walk-in areas. Okay. Essentially what that does is creates a delayed start date, if I may, or separate start dates for non-residents, residents on those public lands or those private lands leased for public hunting opportunities. The second part of the proposal there is the establishment of an application deadline. In your proposal, you have August 1 for non-resident hunters, and the key to the application deadline would be if the application comes in after the application deadline, those archery licenses would then be valid on private land only. They would not be available or valid on public land. So an important point on this to make everybody that's listening or in the audience, again, to understand is that the application deadline does not preclude a non-resident from obtaining a non-resident archery license after the application deadline. Rather, they would only be valid on private land after the application deadline. So I want to make sure that everybody understands that part of your proposal. And then the third part is talking about access permits on 35L, the limited access unit up in northwest South Dakota in Harding County. We talked about the number of hunters and access permits, and we'll get into some of those numbers in a little bit, of folks that are archery hunting, both residents and non-residents, up on 35L in that limited access unit. Again, remember for that limited access unit, we have a limited number of rifle licenses for the West River deer season. And in, up to this point in time, there were not a limited number of archery licenses, both for resident, non-resident, muzzleloader, and youth. But for this, we had a requirement out there that you obtain the access permit, a free one, to better understand how many people are hunting on this particular area. So from those discussions, you ultimately came forward with that proposal, again, that third part of your proposal, a total of 500 access permits. Those divvied up between residents at the level of 400 and non-residents at 100. And so that's what's in front of you as your current proposal. So obviously there's been a lot of comments that have come in. Heard some folks today. We've had several written comments. I know many of you have had verbal conversations with folks. So we went back, got some more input from staff and bring forward to you a couple of recommended changes to the proposal. And we'll talk about those now. So the first one, and have additional supportive information there on your action sheet. I'm just gonna go through one by one if I can, Mr. Chair. So proposal item number one is on that delayed start date for non-resident hunters on public lands. Again, the current proposal is that first Saturday after Labor Day. As you look at the calendar right now, that essentially gives about a 5 to 6 day break or a time frame where residents would have the availability to hunt on that public lands and walk-in areas before non-resident hunters could start. So as we looked at this and we saw some of the comments and having further discussions, from a meaningful impact, looking at really trying to give more time for those resident hunters, looking at it from the standpoint of trying to reduce some of that pressure and competition between residents and non-residents on public lands, it's the belief that a later start date for non-residents should be later than what's under the current proposal. In fact, you can look under our supportive information that we would throw out to you that if this is something that you desire as a commission, we would recommend something more like the October 1 timeframe to have that bigger window or bigger timeframe there for residents only. You heard recommendations from individuals and written comments too that maybe the appropriate date is something similar to what the archery season start date used to be, and that was the fourth Saturday of September. But bottom line is a later start date to be more meaningful and impactful from that standpoint. What I will offer to you as well in our conversations, one of the comments that we heard frequently from hunters, one of the comments that we read frequently in hunter harvest surveys, was the concern over crowding issues and the number of hunters, number of archery hunters that were seen during the rifle season, which is obviously later in the year when we're talking that November time frame. And certainly one of that reasons is folks are interested in archery hunting out there on public lands during the rut. And so obviously that occurs earlier, or excuse me, later than that September time frame. So as we looked at that, and you can see in the supportive information again when licenses were purchased by non-residents, in particular, you look at September, October, about 2,200 licenses were purchased during that time frame during the 2018 hunting season. So knowing the comments that we received during from hunter harvest surveys and comments that we've heard and talking to individuals, knowing that the rut was one of those key time periods as well, if you look at it from that standpoint, then for this type of action to really have a meaningful impact would mean moving that even later into the year. And you start getting into October, November, you might as well essentially say there should be no time frame for non-residents out there then from a delayed start date concept. And so for that very reason is why we have our recommended change to proposal there. Number one is essentially a recommendation to withdraw the delayed start date side of it, in particular because of that crowding impression and comments we heard in particular during that November time frame during the rut. But like I did say in our supportive information, if you believe that that is an appropriate action, we would suggest going later, such as an October 1 deadline time frame. Moving on to the second point is the application deadline. On your backside or your second page of your action sheet, you can see supportive information and some more information there from some other states. Again, going back and looking at this topic, discussing it, looking at application deadline dates for some other states' big game hunting or archery hunting. You can see we have about 7-8 states listed there. One key difference, obviously, between these states when it comes to non-resident archery hunting versus South Dakota would be the limited number of licenses and hence the reason for the application deadline for a lottery drawing. In our case in South Dakota, at least as we stand right now, we do not have a limited number of licenses for non-residents. But again, the concept that you all discussed was having an application deadline to make people take appropriate action earlier on and become dedicated to coming to South Dakota and not be a quote-unquote last resort and finding that place to come hunt in South Dakota. Your proposal had the August 1 deadline. Again, looking at that from a meaningful impact, and making folks looking at a deadline earlier in the year and looking at the other states, we actually bring forward a recommended change to move that back to April 1st. And in April 1st, I can be very honest with you, there's no magical reason for April 1st versus another date. It really came from a discussion standpoint at looking at the other dates that you have on your action sheet there. Seemed like a reasonable time frame. It was in that ballpark of what some of the other states do. But again, from the concept of probably having a real meaningful impact would be that April 1 deadline. And again, an important point there of an April 1 deadline, as a non-resident archery hunter would submit an application, for example, if you moved forward with April 1 and it came in April 15th, that would not preclude them from coming to South Dakota to archery hunt. What it would do is restrict them to private land, and they would not be valid on public land. So again, that's a key point to keep in mind under that proposal item. And then, Mr. Chairman, the last item there, number three, is on the access permits for 35L up in Harding County. Again, this was a result of the discussions that we shared some data and information with you at the commission meeting in Custer State Park. Andy Lindblum and Andrew Norton, our big game biologist, shared several pieces of harvest information, number of hunters and that. And we looked at these numbers, and again, what we did share with you at the commission meeting last time was the numbers of approximately 550 resident hunters that actually participated or actively hunted within 35L, that particular area, and approximately 500 non-resident hunters for a total of about 1,050, give or take by a few hunters. And so then the question came, well, what's the right number? What would seem an appropriate level? And through a lot of discussions, based on hearing the comments of crowding, the number of hunters up there, based on those projections of about 1,050 total hunters between residents and non-residents, requests to you and suggestions to you about limiting the number of non-resident hunters hunting this area, your proposal was generated at a total of 500, which is essentially about half that total number that participated in 2018, and allocating them at 400 to residents and 100 to non-residents. What we would recommend in from an implementation standpoint is that should you move forward with this and the drawing for these limited number of access permits for residents, non-residents, we would do it at the same time that we do access permits drawings for Good Earth State Park, where we issue just a limited number of access permits for resident hunters, and then a limited number at Adams Homestead area down in the southeast corner of the state as well. That would take place approximately late July, about the last week of July right now for this coming hunting season. That's when the drawing would occur for those limited access units. Then what we would recommend is should you again move forward with this come the hunting season of 2020, if you move forward with the April 1 deadline for an application deadline, then we would likely look to move back the drawing for the access permits back to the time frame that we do the regular drawing and application deadline for the firearm seasons at approximately mid-June. And that would give a little more time, obviously, for hunters, both residents, non-residents, if they had gotten selected for that access permit, to have more time for planning and preparation. Again, that being if we move forward with a limited access concept as you have proposed here. So, Mr. Chairman, we don't have necessarily any recommended changes for that third part, just the two previous ones. So that, Mr. Chairman, is again some background information, and we would be more than happy to try to answer any questions that you have or assist you in any way that we can.
Thank you. Questions, comments, Commissioner Phillips.
Thank you. Commissioner Phillips here. I want to go to number two to start with. We set an August 1st deadline. What's the furthest we can move that up this year and make it work? Can we go to July 1st or June? We can't go to June 1st. Can we go to July 1st?
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Phillips, based on the fact, and I may ask John to jump in here if I would be incorrect in stating this, but through the rule process, so with approval today, we would then take the package and forward to the Interim Rules Review Committee in early July, July 9th. And so once that then would go through their process and posting with Secretary of State, we could have it ready to go and implemented by the end of July. And that's so that August timeframe would be the earliest likely for the 2019 season.
But for 2020, we could do whatever we wanted with it.
Certainly for 2020 season, we could move that back, and that's correct. And so if that would be the desire, we could actually write it in rule with the stipulations of saying for the 2019 season, the application deadline date would be, for example, the August 1, and then beginning for the 2020 season, the application deadline would be whatever you as a commission would choose to do. We could make that active at that point.
Can I follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
When is the special buck license application due? It's in April sometime.
Remember the date off the top of your head.
Kevin Roldan here, Deputy Secretary with Game Fish and Parks. Commissioner Phillips, the deadline this year, I believe, was April 15th.
Would it behoove us to put those dates together? Like we could say special buck is April 15th and also our non-resident archers? I mean, is that an opinion, I guess, or should we just say April 1st? There's no magic about April 1st. I'm just looking for a date that we're already using for something.
Commissioner Phillips, the date actually for special buck is not in rule, the actual date itself. Therefore, we would like to have a concrete date in rule stating when the archery license, you know, when they can or could not apply, or when that license converts into a private land only tag, so that then would be enforceable. So it would be good to have a set date in rule, pertaining to this deadline, because that would actually be the authority then given to our staff to then, if there was somebody that was hunting on public land that didn't have that proper license from that date, to essentially charge that person with a false license.
I'd like to make the First Amendment anyway. I'd like to move that we change number 2 to August 1st for 2019 and April 1st, 2020 and thereafter.
August 1st for this year.
For 19.
And then next year, April 1st, and every year after that, April 1st. Mm-hmm. Any discussion? Commissioner, Secretary Hepler.
Not a commissioner.
No.
Not yet. I haven't retired long enough. Just a friendly reminder, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner members, when you start taking final action on these pieces, be sure you address your criteria that, you know, we talked about non-resident, resident, instead of just doing it in a vacuum. And Tom can lead you through. We sent some stuff out to you as a draft for you to look at to stimulate thoughts, but otherwise we're kind of misleading the public. We don't use the criteria we adopted.
Right. I was going to ask, because you did send that out to us.
And Mr. Chairman, what you have in front of you right now is a final piece that we worked up and went through the actual criteria that you as a commission adopted on the resident, non-resident allocation criteria. And so the handout that we just passed out has the bulleted points that when we went through and made a final version of that and addressed some of those topics that we were just talking about here in your proposal itself. And so you will see that some of this is repetitive information and talks about some of those same things, but you know, we went through all of those criteria that you adopted, and in particular what this looked at is I got the wrong one in front of me right now. What you have in front of you is antelope. We're still on archery deer, but
yes,
at the last meeting, Mr. Chairman, we did go through all those criteria, and that we did share that with you. Yes. Yep.
Is that a matter of public record? It should be. If we don't have it yet, we should make it part of the record.
If not, we can certainly add it to the minutes as an appendix so that it would be filed in there. That's correct. We can do that.
Because it is important. I mean, we are trying in all these non-resident allocation issues to work through those new criteria and analyze it pursuant to all of those, which you did for us, and it looked excellent. Any other questions, comments?
We're discussing the amendment?
Amendment from, August 1st this year and then April 1st next year and thereafter. Mr. Sharp.
Commissioner Sharp here. By changing this application date, I would think that would really have the potential to mitigate a lot of the overcrowding issue in Northwest South Dakota. You know, just based on the way the applications have come in, I would expect that alone will fix some of the overcrowding issue. Is that a safe bet?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Sharp, our estimation would be that yes, it will have an impact. Now, this first year, I'm not quite certain what kind of impact that's going to be, because it will be shorter notice, and we're going to have to do our due diligence, number one, to make people aware of it under those circumstances. And we'll make sure to do a strong communication outreach to those hunters as well for following years as well. One would assume that there would be some level of impact, and I say impact, of reducing probably the number of non-resident applications by going with that April 1 deadline. But to give you a number or percentage that it may change would be very difficult at this time, but there would be an expectation that it would have some level of impact on that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Commissioner.
How big is the Slim Buttes area? 35L in total? Is it 70,000 acres, 100,000 acres?
Remember the stats.
Through the chair, Commissioner Sharp, Slim Buttes area, 35L unit is about 100 square miles. So times that by 640, you know, 64,000 acres, somewhere in that realm.
So we could have 100 hunters a day out there and they'd each have a square mile to hunt on?
Yes.
Okay. It just seems like it's improbable that we're having an overcrowding issue out there, and if we do have overcrowding issue of the 30,000 archery hunters that we have in total, it's the 5,000 non-resident that are causing all the problems. And a lot of the comments I've seen where when people talk about overcrowding, they always go, I can't find a campsite. I drive through the campground and it's out of state plates. And yet people go a mile from the campsite or farther away, they don't run into that many crowding, they don't run into that many hunters. So is there only one spot in that 100, you know, square miles that all the deer are at? Or I'm just really trying to figure out how a square mile a hunter with 100 hunters a day, which should be surprised, maybe there are that many out there, I don't know, but man, you start hunting a square mile in eastern South Dakota, that's a lot of ground. So what in your mind is the challenge there in 100 square miles that we're running into crowding issues when we're talking about having the reduction in permits that we're discussing?
I would say, Commissioner Sharp, it's definitely the distribution of those hunters during the certain time of year. And I say that because during the rut and during early September, per se, when hunters are pursuing velvet bucks, we'll see a higher effort to harvest velvet bucks because there's not a lot of opportunity to do so. So we have two periods of the year, that pursuing a velvet buck, and then the second period, which is the rut, in November. I would say the heavier use is in November. So if those hunters were to distribute themselves evenly across each date throughout the 110-day season, we would not have a problem. I mean, because you're right. It would be, the distribution then would be more even. There wouldn't be this overcrowding issue. But with the time frames when deer are more susceptible to harvest, especially that rut time during November, we do see an increased amount of effort. Therefore, we're packing a ton of hunters into a 100 square mile area, and that's when we really see the issue, especially during the firearm season. Just this last year, 78% of the comments received from firearm hunters talked about archery hunters and how they ruined their hunt, essentially. And that number's been on the increase over the last few years. It was started at about 20%, went to 50% of the comments, and now we're at about 80% of the comments. So during November is definitely the time of the year when this crowding issue is most prevalent. There are days of the week we can go out there and you only see one or two people in the parking lot, you know, during the weekdays, those sorts of things. But during the weekends, during November, it is very busy. It is. And one thing, too, about 35L, the distribution of that unit, we have the large Slim Buttes unit, then we have the North Short Pines, we have, you know, the Cave Hills. So we have like three or four different geographic locations that make up this unit, but they're all throughout Harding County. They're not all just right there in the Slim Buttes per se. So that's another issue. And some of those hunters don't go exploring, let's say, the North Cave Hills or the South Cave Hills or the Short Pines. They stick to that larger chunk of public land, the Slim Buttes, so Custer National Forest, if you will. So that's the issue. If we could spread everybody out evenly, we likely would not have a crowding issue, especially in November, but that's not the case.
Questions, any more comments? So the motion is to have an application deadline of August 1 for this year and April 1st for next year and thereafter.
Yes.
All in favor of that amendment, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Amendment passes. So now we have other pieces of the proposal. Mr. Locken.
Commissioner Locken here. In visiting with a lot of people, you know, we're throwing a lot at them. they've booked their vacation schedules, and now we're cutting the permits in half. I'm wondering if we just should, at least this year, cut it a little more slack. maybe run 625 permits, which would leave us with 500 residents and 125 non-residents. That would give us the original 20%. A lot of people have been counting on this season. They're assuming they can have it, and then I think we should try to accommodate as many as we can. We're still putting a number on it. We'll know if it works. You may come back and tell me that was a mistake, but at least we tried. I would move to move it to that number. 625 permits in 35L, with 125 of those going to non-residents.
And then will your motion be to do that for just this year or going forward?
This year would be just fine with me, and then evaluate it.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion. Mr. Beese.
Commissioner Travis Beese here. I want to make a comment. Through this whole discussion, all we're doing is about talking about controlling people. I haven't heard much about the discussion about wildlife and what's best for the deer that are in the area. This is a trophy area. Are we managing it with a trophy area, or are we managing the people to access it? If we have trophy deer there, and that's what we're managing it for, then we should manage the people for the betterment of the wildlife and not the betterment of the people. So what condition is our animals in that 35L? And if we're managing it for trophies, will that handle this type of pressure? Are we taking too many bucks out of there to obtain that goal? Or what's the goal here?
So the goal of this unit, you know, we call it a limited access unit to provide a quality hunt. And to answer your question on the biological side of things, we do not have age structure of the harvest. We don't have those data. We don't collect teeth from these bucks that are harvested. Anecdotally, from hunters that have hunted there that I've spoke with and the regional staff have spoke with, buck quality has decreased. There are more younger age deer out there now than there has been in the past, but that's anecdotal. We have no data to support that. In order to do something like that, we would have to quantify a good portion of those deer that are harvested to get an age structure, to figure out what our average age of the herd is. Is it a 3-year-old buck or is it a 5-year-old buck, to get back to that trophy status. The intentions aren't to have a trophy unit. It's more of a quality hunt, and I think that quality hunt is really barred around the idea of not having too many people out there at one time. In the eye of the beholder, every hunter has a different opinion on what quality of hunt is, and actually we're wrangling around the idea of doing a pretty rigorous scientific survey on it. Social science, applying some social science, some interviews, looking at the before and after of how we would quantify, does this change or a change the commission makes today or in the future, how does that impact the quality of hunt and overall hunter satisfaction? Hunter satisfaction is one quantifiable variable we do have, and that is really, we ask our hunters, were you satisfied with your hunt? Rate it from 1 to 7, 7 being the highest rating, 1 being the lowest. And through time, we have averaged about a six rating with our firearm hunters. That has dropped significantly in the last couple of years. This year in 2018, I shouldn't say this year, last year in 2018, we had a 4.7 satisfaction rating. So satisfaction has declined. And one thing that highly is correlated with satisfaction is hunter success. If a hunter shoots a deer, they're satisfied. If a hunter shoots a big deer, they're really satisfied. In a lot of cases, and it's, again, to the eye of the beholder. So I'm making some speculation here, but once you see satisfaction decline, a couple things play a role. They're not either seeing deer, or they're not having the opportunity to harvest a mature deer, or potentially they're seeing too many people and feel like it's overcrowded. So those are some of the things that impact hunter satisfaction. It's not an inclusive list, but we could spend a lot of time trying to figure that out, but your questions are very valid. In order to answer your question specifically, Commissioner Beese, we have to do some pretty rigorous age structure type modeling along with, you know, figuring out the actual age of those deer that are harvested, which we do not have at this time.
So if we will go from 500 to 625, that tells us 125 more people, but could you remind us of the harvest rate and archery deer situation, and how many more deer will be harvested if we put 125 more archers out there?
Total number of deer?
Sure, if under either under the 500 scenario or the 625.
Well, if we look at overall harvest, the hunter success at approximately 17 to 20% at archery level, looking at non-resident residents combined at another 125 would be 20-some total deer. Okay. Speculating or assuming based on similar statistics as we currently see.
Sure.
20% increase.
Yeah.
Chair.
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you. Can you remind me where we came up with the current number at 500 with the 100 non-residents and 400? I know that the South Dakota bow hunters would like to see that at 50 and 350 and or 400. And so where did we, did you guys come up with that? Or who came up with the 500 number with that split?
Mr. Chairman, so last month at the commission meeting after the early part of the day discussions looking at all the alternatives, the evening of the commissioners, a subgroup getting together and talking about the overall concepts and the development of your proposal here, the 500 itself, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, really came from the standpoint of looking at, as I mentioned earlier, that we projected or estimated about 1,050 hunters between residents and non-residents utilize that 35L area. And hearing the comments of concerns over crowding, pressure, went for the concept of cutting it in half and that being a starting point. It was not, 500 was not derived by some scientific data or modeling or something like that. It was an approach of saying, okay, this is the number where we're at, we're hearing the concerns, and took a stab at it and go and say, we're gonna start out by cutting it in half. So that's where the 500 came from. And then, excuse me, it was just a conversation based on the 500 then, how do you divvy that up between residents and non-residents? And honestly, there was the discussion about the 8% mark that's used in firearms right now. And when you look at that, that number was extremely small. If you apply 8% to 500, you're talking 40 permits compared to what was available the year previously. And just looking at the sheer numbers, 500 individuals actively hunted on 35L as non-residents, I believe it was the belief of the commissioners that was too of a drastic of a reduction or a change. And so discussions ensued and looked at 500 and go, what seems appropriate, what would seem reasonable moving forward as a proposal, and it was divvied up between 400 and 100. Mr. Chairman, maybe you can elaborate, but that's my recollection of your conversation.
Oh, I think you've explained it accurately. Commissioner Sharp.
Thank you. Commissioner Sharp here. Just a background question. What makes Slim Butte so popular?
Commissioner Sharp, to my knowledge, a couple things. One being that campground that's located right on the Forest Service property, right off the main highway there. That's a very popular Riva campground, they call it. That's part of the Slim Buttes. I mean, you can pull in any time of the day, pitch a tent, put your RV there, whatever. It's very convenient for hunters to do so during that time of year. The other part is just the overall quality of habitat. If you look at an aerial aerial photograph, the Slim Buttes really just pops out because it's very unique in the sense it's almost a little oasis or an island of ponderosa and steep, rugged terrain, and it's very conducive to mule deer and whitetail for that matter. That's what attracts, good deer populations to it, and then the surrounding area are alfalfa flats. It's just that perfect combination of, agricultural interface with rugged terrain, cover. It's just a perfect little setting of good deer population productivity, and that's what attracts our hunters there, is because we have deer there at a higher density than the rest of the prairie in Harding County. Now, there's other areas that are public land within Harding County that hold just as many deer in some cases, but that it is, you look at a map and you see this big chunk of public land, You see this big chunk of public land that offers great topography, great cover. That's what attracts bow hunters. That's what attracts deer, and that's why those bow hunters are there, to pursue those deer. So it's kind of a combination of things.
Mr. Follow-up. Kind of to follow up on Commissioner Beese's comment, does this area make sense to possibly turn it into a trophy area? I mean, we're trying to limit access so much with this proposal that are we by default making it a trophy area? Do we look at making it a more expensive trophy hunt with a minimum of so many points if you're going to take a buck? Really walk down that path, because we're slowly looking at that. If we're making it so hard to get a tag there or access to that, that's ultimately we're kind of backing into it.
No, Commissioner Sharp, great question. And you know, one of the things when you start talking about a trophy unit, and some states have implemented trophy units, you really cut into opportunity substantially. And some folks, a lot of folks actually just want the opportunity to harvest a mature deer. And that's so hard to define trophy. What does a trophy mean to you versus mean to me versus mean to Tom sitting next to me? So we run into this issue of value judgment. It's a value judgment as to what a trophy is or what a mature deer is. So if we do go down the trophy management unit path, first, one thing we have to consider and be all in agreement upon is we are going to reduce opportunity substantially, and we are going to have a good amount of animals out there, i.e. mature deer, that aren't going to be harvested, that could be harvested by our users. So we're taking that opportunity away. But the folks that do draw the lucky ticket are going to have an opportunity to harvest a mature deer slash a trophy type deer. And that's a decision that we'd have to spend some more time on, let's put it that way, to really figure out if that's what we want to do, is manage that area as a trophy unit. We're going to need some more data regarding age structure of those bucks. We would need some more social science data regarding what trophy or quality hunt means to the users of that unit. And I would also like to survey our users and see if that was something they'd be interested in, you know, that trophy management type philosophy.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Commissioner Sharp.
See, from my standpoint, I would suggest we maybe get that information, because we're limiting people's opportunity to hunt there. We just cut non-resident by 80%. That's a pretty big limiting opportunity, you know, and we're cutting resident, you know, a fair
50.
So, like I say, we're kind of marching down that path anyway. So, it's just, I'm not saying that's not a form of emotion, but I think at some point we need to really start ascertaining how much of this is managing people so they have their quality hunt versus really why do we have so many young bucks out there versus some of the bigger ones that we've been used to in the past. So thank you.
Commissioner Sharp, if I may follow up on that, you're absolutely correct. I mean, we would have to do some more monitoring. And we do plan to, like I said, initiate a research proposal or a study on this regarding the quality of hunt question. What does quality of hunt mean to folks that are hunting 35L? One thing that would be very interesting to see, if these changes were imposed today, how does that influence or affect hunter satisfaction? You know, we could have almost causation isn't correlation, but there could be some of that derived from some of these changes through social science, you know, through the interviews of these hunters, through surveys and those sorts of things. So what we do today, we need to measure. And we need to measure to see if that influences hunter satisfaction, if it influences the overall success of our firearm hunters, those types of things. So point well taken, and I think that's a great conversation to continue in the future for sure.
Mr. Chair. Commissioner Whitmire here. On the rifle component, do you know the harvest in 35L with rifle versus archery, just for the whole picture?
Commissioner, I only have archery statistics right in front of me. Andy or Chad? We'll get that for you shortly.
Oh, Secretary Hepler. Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, no offense to my friend Commissioner Lacken that with the amendment that is on the table, but you know, we just killed a proposal that was based on use. I mean, we heard from 1,000 people from Deerfield Lake in that area that didn't want us to have motorized vehicles because of they're the ones that were using it. We've heard from the South Dakota bow hunters who also are the users. They represent the bow hunters in our state. And, you know, I think that they asked for, you know, 50 and 400, which we I think that at 100 and 400, we've compromised a little bit. They asked for an original date to push the license back, and it was, you know, later than April 1, so I think we've moved the ball both there to make some good compromise, and I'm not able to support the amendment, but I like the numbers that we're going now, and we're getting closer to that, you know, the basing it on, as Director Life said earlier, we like to pride ourselves on the science of what we're doing and to Rochambeau numbers and to pride appease everybody. I just don't think we can do it, so thanks.
Terry Hepler, did you have something?
You know, one that, for the record, Kelly Hepler, Secretary of Game, Fish, and Parks. You know, one of the things when we first started having this discussion, I don't know how long ago it was now, almost last year, is that, and when you talk to Dr. Longmire too, is, you know, what's a clear objective you're trying to attain? Because if you want to know whether you're successful or not, whether you're moving down the road to the trophy hunt, as Commissioner Sharp is referring to, I clearly understand what Dana and Crowder are saying. I understand that, and I don't doubt that viewpoint. But as far as the commission viewpoint, what is your objective you're really trying to attain? And we had the same discussion internally, and we were talking about taking that area where I live, and we're going to do it into, you know, a quality area also. I mean, what are you trying to measure? So I'm hearing different things from different people on the commission. Now, you can be, I mean, you don't have to have a clear objective. That's just me coming out. You can say we're perfectly fine where we're going, Kelly. Just go along for the ride and tell us whether we're successful or not. That seemed to be kind of chasing an answer, and that's all I'm trying to do is somewhere in your, when you, no doubt you can take some kind of action today, but when you do, try to be clear what you really want us to measure, because then we sit down with Dr. Longmire and we design this study we're going to go out and do, then we have some idea, you know, I want to bring back something that's meaningful to you so we didn't miss it, but also the people listening to this, because the testimony, from public testimony viewpoint, we had different ideas about what they were trying to accomplish and what they weren't trying to accomplish. And that's leaving the whole thing aside about resident, non-resident issue. That's a part of this, but that isn't what I'm talking about right now. So as much as possible, I know it may be difficult, and that's what these things are, difficult. And that's why the reason I think you can debate whether it should be 625 or 500 or 450 or whatever number you want, because it, what are you trying to accomplish? And Dr. Longmire, did I do justice to your question? Do I see an ID and has? Please, yes, no, yes. Thank you.
Commissioner Lacken.
Commissioner Lacken here. Managing for big trophy animals is a good thing on private land. I think when we're talking public land, we better back down to, instead of a 10, maybe a 7.5 or a 7, and give opportunity to more people. Because it is public land. One voice that resonated to me came from a hunter at Milbank, South Dakota, that said, you know, I've been out there a lot of years. I just want the opportunity to go back out there and sit on a hillside and glass the area. He said, I really don't care if I need to shoot another buck or not. But, you know, you're trying to satisfy everybody. And we've pulled a lot of, you know, this has been a big change for a lot of, or this is going to be a big change for a lot of people, because a lot of people won't get out there. Probably about 400 people won't get on that land by limiting it this. And I've just had some second thoughts that maybe we're limiting too many for the first year, and let's ease into it.
Mr. Sharp.
Mr. Sharp here. So, you know, I think the Secretary asked a good question. We move the date back. We limit licenses. So how do we know if we've been successful in what we're trying to do? So what does success look like on this proposal? And how do we measure it? Do we make everybody fill out a survey that gets the permit? Do we make everybody meet with our conservation officer and give a tooth? You know, what? How are we going to measure? And they may want to have to give a tooth from the deer, too.
No,
it's a tough state.
Commissioner Sharp, as you know, I like to quantify things, and numbers are my friend, and I think you're spot on. We need to be able to quantify a few things in this realm, one being hunter satisfaction in particular. That's one of the metrics we have from past survey data. That's one of the metrics we can continue to receive from future survey data. That's going to be one that we're going to have to rely heavily on. Are our hunters satisfied that are hunting there via firearm? Are they satisfied that, you know, the archers, are they satisfied? Those two user groups in particular. You know, the other thing we'll have to do is we'll have to interview some folks, you know, in the field type interviews, because sometimes those conversations shed more light on the situation than just a survey. We're going to likely take a multivariant approach where we're going to have some different, routes of communication, one being a survey, one being talking to folks. The study design hasn't been yet determined, but one thing for certain, it's not just going to be one thing that we're going to try to measure. It's going to be multiple things. How we wrap that all up and making management implications from that is yet to be determined, and I'm going to rely heavily on Dr. Longmire before she leaves us here in the next few weeks to put that together. So, yes, I totally agree. Moving forward, we have to identify how we measure success. And it's not just the number of dead deer. That's part of it. That's part of it. But it's going to be more than that, because quality of hunt is so different in every different hunter. The perception of a quality hunt is different from everybody sitting in this room. So that's a very hard thing to wrangle. In social science, I'm learning a lot in the last 2 years with Dr. Longmire at my side, is tougher to make inference off than just pure quantifiable data. So we're getting there.
Mr. Chairman, one thing that I would follow up on what Kevin said when he talked about satisfaction, you'll see it even on the action sheet, the second page, on proposal item number 3, the last sentence of the first paragraph, where we talk about what Kevin just said. We have satisfaction ratings going back a couple of years. One of the things is we're going to dive into that a little bit more and ask a few more detailed questions about satisfaction, because satisfaction can be dictated by multiple things. How successful were they? How many deer did they see? How many people did they see? We're going to dive into that with a few more questions on hunter harvest surveys to better understand that versus just the overall satisfaction. And I think we'll be able to gauge some more interest and success on what potential changes happen here today might impact that. And the other piece where we're going to learn a lot is just in our hunter harvest comments. That's the one place where we see multiple types of comments about these issues that you have been talking about the last 2 months. And we'll see if that same level occurs or if we see a change in or a shift in those comments of things are better. We didn't see as many people, some of those types of comments, or there's going to be a lot of pieces that we'll look at.
One other thing that just came to my attention in my mind here, and we'd be remiss not to mention it, would be the fact that we are having issues with access permit compliance. We haven't discussed that yet today, where we have folks hunting Custer National Forest without an access permit. Actually, a significant number of folks, according to the harvest data we have received through hunter survey cards. That's going to be something we need to figure out very soon as to how we can make people more accountable for making sure they do have an access permit. Obviously, limiting the number of access permits, that's a first step. Maybe not making those access permits free. Going back and getting some authority to charge a fee for those access permit with the legislature, that would be something we should maybe look into doing. Because, again, these are free access permits. They're not voluntary. You do need one to hunt there. But, again, they're free. So compliance has been difficult. I mean, we're talking upwards of, in some cases, 200 to 300 folks we think might be hunting there without an access permit. So I'd be remiss not to mention that, and we are pursuing that as a department to figure out ways to make sure people are complying with that access permit in the future.
And you couldn't limit the license to that area because they can hunt other public areas? Is that, that's the problem. You can't have a specific license area.
Mr. Jensen, you could, but that license then would be only valid on that Custer National Forest 35L. So they would have a license specific to 35L. That archery license would not be valid anywhere else but there. We could go down that road, but then that statewide, you'd have a statewide, you'd have an east and a west, and then you'd have a 35L. So we'd be making another license type. That's another consideration that the commission has the authority to do. One thing I did want to get back to was Commissioner Whitmire's question about how many deer were harvested on 35L. I'm going to pull out just the mule deer bucks, because this is what people go to 35L to harvest, mule deer bucks. In 2014, there was 35 mule deer bucks harvested by archery hunters. There was 57 harvested by firearm hunters. We'll rewind to 2016, or fast forward to 2016. There was 72 firearm hunters that killed, or 72 bucks harvested by firearm hunters. There was 52 bucks harvested by archery hunters. That was 2016. Now go back to, or fast forward to 2018 then, there was 76 mule deer bucks harvested with archery equipment and 63 harvested with firearm. Last year was the first year we had more bucks harvested by archery equipment than we did with firearm hunters in the last 5 years of data. So what we're seeing is archery harvest goes up, and now we're starting to see firearm harvests come down slightly. So the tides maybe have turned just this last year, and with that, those comments mirror each other. Not just comments, but satisfaction. Satisfaction has gone down when archery harvest goes up. So we're seeing this inverse relationship with that, and the number of negative comments we're receiving on the actual hunter survey card from our firearm hunters is that 78% of them just last year mentioned the fact they're seeing too many hunters on that unit when they're out there hunting with a rifle. So we do have, I mean, again, though, this is a lot of, it's not real quantifiable data. A lot of it is subject to not a sound science-based inference, but at the end of the day, it's definitely supportive information to helping all of you make a decision today.
Any other comments? Question. The motion on the table is to change the proposal from a total of 500 in 35L to 625, so that would be 500 residents and 125 non-residents as opposed to the 400 and the 100, right?
That's exactly right. For 1 year.
For 1 year. All right. Any more discussion on that? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. So we have a second amendment. Roll call. We need a roll call now.
Commissioner Boyd?
Aye.
Commissioner Locken?
Aye.
Commissioner Beese?
Aye.
That was an
aye.
Commissioner Olson?
Nay.
Commissioner Whitmire?
Aye.
Commissioner Phillips?
Aye.
Commissioner Sharp?
Aye.
Commissioner Jensen?
Aye.
Motion carries 6-2.
All right, and so that takes us. Does anyone want to propose something different?
I think we should talk about number one, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, that's what I was going to get to. I mean, Commissioner Phillips, what would you like to propose?
Commissioner Phillips here. I still like the idea of a late start. I understand the explanation that you've given to do away with that. You know, we're not stopping them from coming here. They can still come here and hunt private land all they want. We're not limiting them. We're even not limiting them to hunting in November when the rut is on. So if they want to come hunt the rut, they can. We have late starts for another season. It's a pheasant season. We have, is it a week or 2 weeks when the residents hunt before the non-residents come here? So I would like to at least see what the commission thinks about changing it to the fourth Saturday in September. I won't make that motion yet till I want to hear some discussion on it first and see what the commissioners think about changing it to the fourth Saturday in September.
Well, so let me ask, maybe this is crazy, but what if it was the other way? What if you said you have to be done by the middle of October and you can't come in November?
I think we need to turn to our non-resident criteria at that moment.
Well, I wondered what the answer would be to that, but. Mr. Beese.
Commissioner Travis Beese, I kind of favor the October one start date, and just because one of the concerns that was brought up about the Black Hills and archery elk seasons going on at the time, we really can't really, you know, break that Black Hills out by itself at this time. But if we could go to an October 1 date, that would help alleviate some of the pressure in the hills while archery elk season is going on, because that's such a hard tag to get, and it takes a lot of years for people to draw that tag. So if we went to the October 1st on public lands, that would include that and help that situation a little bit, plus satisfy the later start date for other public lands at the same time.
Commissioner Olson?
It wasn't related to that. Commissioner Olson, do you find that through user surveys that the non-residents that are coming in, are they coming in looking for those velvet animals, or do you see a higher density of hunters coming to try to hit the rut? And would that matter where we're talking about these start dates?
Commissioner Olson, that's a hard question to answer, because we just had this earlier archery season start. This 2018 is the September 1st opener. I would say definitely the rut, based on, you know, where we're at, just with having it 1 year of implementation in 2018. Even just looking at license sales, online license sales of our non-resident archery license holders, a lot of those folks aren't buying licenses even until October or even November. So it would be a safe bet to say that most of them are focusing on that rut time to come over here and hunt deer on public lands.
So to speculate, so that this moving it back wouldn't have an adverse effect on the number of non-residents that are coming to here for that opportunity?
No, that is why the department decided to withdraw the petition, because of the minimal impact we feel it would have based on the number of licenses we sold during different times of the year, and that focus being around that rut hunt.
I move we amend the proposal to have a late start date of October 1st for non-residents.
Is there a second? More discussion? Any more discussion? Oh, yep. Any discussion? No more discussion. All in favor of the amendment, which would change the start date for non-residents on public ground to October 1st. No more discussion. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, so that passes. So we're now we're having an application deadline of August 1st for this year, April 1st next year and thereafter, a late start for non-residents on public ground of October 1st this year and thereafter, and 625 total access permits on 35L, 500 of which are for residents and 125 are for non-residents. That's where we're at, right?
I believe so.
That's the current proposal.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
So we need a motion to approve that. Second?
Second.
Any more discussion? Commissioner Sharp.
Commissioner Sharp, I just want to thank the department for all the effort you guys have put into this. This has been a lot of work, a lot of discussion, and everything else. And I can't support the proposal only from the standpoint that I think the archery issue is such a large issue in our state that we really need to crawl, walk, run this one, you know, down the path. And I think the crawl approach would have been to change the application date and leave it at that, and then find out how that affected things, and then maybe take a look at, you know, really how many archery hunters are in the state, and maybe do some surveying in that unit, because I think eventually we're gonna have to take a look at really how many archery licenses are available statewide, because I think it's gonna be a bigger issue than just 35L. So I'm not convinced this is the right approach to just fix one unit. So, but I wanted to acknowledge all the work the commissioners and staff has put into this, and I appreciate it.
Any other comments, questions? If not, all in favor of the proposal as it's been amended, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Commissioner Sharp. Roll call.
Commissioner Boyd?
Aye.
Commissioner Locken?
Aye.
Commissioner Bies?
Aye.
Commissioner Olson?
Aye.
Commissioner Whitmire?
Aye.
Commissioner Phillips?
Aye.
Commissioner Sharp?
Nay.
Commissioner Jensen?
Aye.
Motion carries 7-1.
All right, thank you. So, in the time we have left, let's go to number 5, huh? License list.